Hello and welcome to episode 2 of BoagWorld.com, a podcast for anybody involved in developing, designing or running websites on a regular basis. So on this edition of BoagWorld.com, we're going to look at a number of things. We're going to start off by looking at my shame for not being an American. Then we're going to take some time and look at some feedback that we received on this podcast. And then our main feature today is on web standards, a better way to build your website. We're also going to look at some news and see what's been going on this week in the world of web design before finishing up with me getting very overexcited about the upcoming release of Dreamweaver 8. Okay, so let's just take a minute to talk about this podcast and how it's gone and how it's going and what it's going to be like in the future. It's been a bit of a strange week for me, this experiment of podcasting. And obviously the first thing I did was start to listen to other technical podcasts and see what they were like and see how I compared and stuff. And unfortunately I decided that I came up horribly short. Not because of my content, not necessarily because of my presentation, but because of my nationality. Basically, every technical podcast I listened to was American, and I've decided that there's certain key elements you can only do as an American when you do a technical podcast. For a start, it seems essential that you have to say the word dude as often as possible, and it just doesn't work as a British person saying the word dude. It just doesn't sound right. And also you've got to talk about technology as being totally awesome, and again it just doesn't sound right, does it, when I say it? Oh well. But luckily we do have an English equivalent, which is that we say that was very nice indeed. And so I think we'll work on the basis if I say it's very nice indeed, that actually means it's totally awesome. Okay, so bear with my Britishness and hopefully everything will work out right. I've received a lot of really good feedback from people, and I really appreciate everybody that's taken the time to contact me. Every email I've received so far has been encouraging, and that's great news. Nobody has said that I should get off the air, so I will carry on regardless. In particular, there were a few people that I want to mention. Jamie wrote to me and asked that we did a bit on CSS and XHTML, which is one of our big features today as we talk about web standards. And Dwayne asked that I talk about some programs I like and use. And as we're finishing off today's podcast by talking about Dreamweaver 8 and my unnecessary excitement at that, hopefully he will be satisfied too. So all of your feedback is very much appreciated. I'd also like to get some other people's voices on this thing other than mine, so you don't have to listen to me the whole time. So if you've got some comments on the podcast, or if you have a question you want to ask and you want some answers to certain issues, then if you could send me an MP3 file of you asking that question, that'd be absolutely brilliant, and I can add it into the mix and hopefully respond to that. So if you do have any MP3 files, send them to me at paul@boagworld.com. That's paul@boagworld.com. Okay, right, let's move on from that backpatting exercise onto something a bit more important. So our main topic for today is the subject of web standards. And I think the majority of people fall into one of perhaps four categories when it comes to web standards. There's those people that have never heard of it, and it's entirely new to them. There's a group of people that are just so busy with the day-to-day work that when anybody talks about web standards or different ways of building websites, they go, la la la, not listening, can't look at that, too busy, haven't got time, looks too complicated. And then there's the group of people that have looked at it and rejected it for various different reasons. And then finally, there's the web standards fanatic, such as myself. And the reason I wanted to really look at web standards really right at the outset of this podcast is because everything that I talk about week in and week out will be in some way related to web standards. Web standards is the methodology I use to construct all of the sites that I do, and so it kind of has an impact on everything, really. So I felt it was a really important subject to touch on briefly. So let's look at those different groups of people and see if we can address some of their different issues. Let's start with the people that have never heard of web standards by giving you a little bit of background about what web standards are and how they've come about. And to do that, really, we have to go right back into the mists of time, to a point where HTML was first created and first came into being. And when HTML was originally created, it was really created with a completely different task in mind to what it's used for today. And that task was to share text-only documents between various academic institutions, etc. And so HTML was created as a way of marking up those documents so that it was obvious what the content was on them, what the document was about, how it was structured and organized. It wasn't designed really to display lots of pretty graphics, and certainly wasn't designed to be used as a marketing tool, which is what it's been used for today. So since the web has become so popular, and we're doing all kinds of things on the web now that was never conceived of before, the poor old web designer is left in a situation where they're trying to have to kind of hack HTML around in order to achieve the layouts and designs that their clients request of them. And so we do all kinds of horrible things, like nesting tables one within another and slicing and dicing up images to fit into that kind of jigsaw of table cells. And we also use spacer GIFs to get things positioned in the right place, and we bodge fonts, and we do all kinds of evil things to this poor language of HTML. So it really deserves your pity and your love. But that isn't how things stayed. A while back, a new technology came about called CSS. And CSS, I'm sure you've all heard of, and basically means cascading style sheets. And the idea of cascading style sheets was that you can begin to separate out design from content. So the HTML file would just hold the content. It would be used as was originally intended it to be used, and it would mark up that content. So it would say, this is a header, this is a paragraph, this is a quotation, etc., etc. And would only describe the document semantically. It would describe what the document contains. It wouldn't contain design or any elements like that. And then the CSS file would format that HTML, would contain all of the design elements, and would display that content in a correct manner, in the manner that the designer intended. So you can have all of your pretty graphics without breaking HTML and keep the code clean. Okay, so let's just move on to the second and third group of people I mentioned. There was those that have got their head buried in the sand going, la, 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 I can't think about this, it's too much to deal with, I've got lots else to deal with. And also those that have rejected it for one reason or another. Well, I guess my message to you is really, it's time. Now is the time to really look at web standards. It's no longer the preserve of just evangelists such as myself that are really enthusiastic about it. It really is moving into the mainstream. Pretty much all of your big name sites now are moving across to web standards, or at least have plans to do so in the near future. It's a technology and an approach that you can't afford to ignore anymore, and it will be the way that websites are designed in the future. So really burying your head in the sand and going la 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 is not an option. It's time to address this. And I'll be honest with you, it is a hard transition. When I first started learning web standards, I first came across it after reading Jeffrey Zeldman's book on the subject. And it just totally blew my mind. And I kind of sat rocking backwards forwards in the corner, weeping softly to myself at the thought of really having to relearn everything I've ever known about table-based web design. And it was a big transition. I had to go through a painful process of, something that would take me 2 seconds to do in tables seemed to take forever when I use CSS. And one of the things that all these web standards evangelists were saying is that development time is so much quicker using CSS. And I was going, no, it's not. It takes forever. But that's only because I was new to it. And like anything else, I didn't really know how to deal with it properly. Now, for those of you that have rejected web standards, probably the main reason you've rejected it is because of browser bugs, that it displays in different ways in different browsers. And I'm not going to turn around and lie and say that that isn't the case. The situation at the moment is that you do require various hacks and workarounds in order to be able to get it to look right in IE5 and IE5.5, and it renders differently in IE6 than it does in Firefox, and it is a difficult area. But what I would argue is that that's just as true with table-based design. It's just that you're so familiar with the hacks and bodges that you need to do that you don't even think about them. They're subconscious. And it becomes like that when you do web standards as well. After a while, you don't think twice about the fact that you have to have a separate IE5 style sheet just to deal with the fact that it screws up the box level objects in a different way. But let's move on from the problems with web accessibility and spend a few moments looking at the benefits and why I think that we should all be adopting it as a method of working. One of the major benefits, I believe, is with improved accessibility. Because the W3C, the World Wide Web Consortium, were the organisation that put together the specification for HTML and CSS, and were also the organisation that put together the WAI guidelines for accessibility, it's hardly surprising that the two work very well together. And although it's perfectly possible to create an accessible site using table-based design, it is certainly a lot easier to do using web standards. There is a school of thought that would argue that it's actually impossible to make higher levels of accessibility on your website without adopting web standards, because there are certain checkpoints in the WAI guidelines that do specifically say separate out content from design using CSS. So it could be argued that actually in order to reach the highest levels of accessibility you need to be using web standards, but I'm not going to get into that issue right here. The other huge benefit, I think, of web standards is the fact that to some extent it future-proofs your site. Now, that's not to say things are never going to change, and obviously things do go out of date. I mean, visually it's going to date, technologically it will date, but there are some things worth considering. Because the W3C are the people that are creating the guidelines for new technology that's being introduced, they are going to tend to ensure that things are backwards compatible. So as they introduce new technology in, it's going to be compatible with web standards. But even from a visual point of view, the fact that you've separated content from design means that if your site is beginning to look visually dated, you can change the entire site just by altering a few cascading style sheets in preference to editing every single page of the entire site. The benefits of this are enormous. It means that to roll out a new design across your site is a relatively straightforward process compared to the laborious task of going through every single page of your site. I can imagine that some of you who work regularly on huge sites such as university sites or other institutional websites, part of the reason you won't have adopted web standards is because you're left with this legacy of thousands and thousands of pages where design is messed up with content, and therefore it's impossible to go in and make substantial changes. Well, if you do finally overcome the obstacle of moving to web standards, you'll find that's the last time that you're going to have to go and edit every single page of your site, because from then on you can just edit the cascading style sheet. The other thing that I really like about web standards is that it is backwards compatible. If you build a site with web standards, it will work on every browser under the sun, from IE6 through to a DOS-based text browser. It really will deal with absolutely everything. Now, that's not to say it's going to look the same on every single browser, but at least you'll be able to navigate around it. Because if a browser doesn't understand the cascading style sheet, it's always got easy to use, simple, clean HTML to fall back on. Now, you can't say the same about table-based design. You know, how often did you have to write on sites, this site needs to be viewed in IE5 or above or whatever, because certain bits of the site just wouldn't work the further back you go. So again, that's another big advantage of web standards. It can also work across multiple devices. Because you've separated design from content, there's no reason why you can't switch those design files depending on the device. So if somebody's coming and looking at your site using a mobile phone or a PDA or even a touchscreen kiosk, you can detect that and change the interface to suit that device. And it's not a huge amount of work to create multiple interfaces. It really can be a relatively straightforward process. And there's a kind of little aside to that principle, and probably for a lot of people, especially those that aren't really into the kind of nitty-gritty of designs, but perhaps run websites, this is probably the biggest benefit of all. How many times have you gone to a website and you've decided to print it and it's cut off half the right-hand side of the page and you can't read some of the text because it's on a funny coloured background and it doesn't print the backgrounds properly, etc., etc.? Well, because you've got design separated from content, when you hit the print button of a web standards site, it can use a completely different style sheet for printing. That means you can remove all of the aspects from your printed version that aren't needed. So you don't print the navigation, you don't print the search box, because you can't use those when you've printed something out. They're interactive elements that you don't use on a print version of the site. If you want to see what this is like, go to boagworld.com and just print as you would do normally using the browser. And as you'll see, it'll print totally differently to what you see on the screen. You can actually even add elements to your printout. So for example, it might be useful that every printout includes your email address on it or your contact details. Well, you can do that. That's the advantage of separating content from design. For those that are marketeers listening to this podcast, you'll be also interested to know that web standards based sites tend to do much better in search engines as well. And this is because, as far as Google is concerned, it doesn't take any notice of the design whatsoever. So whereby in traditional based design, you would say make a heading 20 pixels large in this color and you'd make it bold, Google has no way of telling that's a heading. But because in web standards you separate content from design, you don't say this is going to be this size and this color. What you do in your HTML code is you say this is a heading, and then you style all the headings to look a certain way. So the result is that Google can look through your HTML code and go, yeah, I understand this, this makes sense, I know what's important and I know what's not, and so it tends to rank you better. But I guess probably the single biggest benefit of web standards is the performance benefit that it provides. Now, with huge websites, with large amounts of traffic, this actually makes a big difference. Because basically, you're not having to have very complex code of nested tables and tables within tables and spacer gifs all to get things positioned correctly. Because you don't have to do any of that, file sizes of your HTML drop considerably. This in turn means less is being downloaded, and that makes savings on bandwidth for your hosting. But even if you don't have huge amounts of traffic and don't really care about the cost of bandwidth, it's still worth doing. It means that the websites are quicker, more responsive, users don't have to wait as long for things to download. There's a bit of an opinion that's going around at the moment that says, well, everybody has broadband these days, we don't need to worry about download time. Well, yes, you still do. You know, in the UK, 50% of people still are using dial-up, and as a result, you can't ignore them. So there you go, there's a few of the benefits, as I see it, of web standards. But I do just want to finish by saying a few words to those of you that are already using web standards. First thing I want to say is don't be smug. It's so easy to get smug because we're using the latest techniques in designing and producing our websites. Yeah, bully for us, but it doesn't mean that we're doing it well. How you implement web standards is as important as the fact that you use them. It's very easy to screw up a site and to use web standards badly. So good practice is always still important. Also, I would say don't become a zealot over it. So for example, when I first started getting into web standards, everything had to be tableless. I never used tables except for tabular data. And then I began to realise, well, actually there are occasions where just to use one or two tables in a site to solve some of the problems that CSS has with creating columns, it's actually just as simple and just as good as doing it all in CSS. Now, I know I might be controversial and I expect I'll get some complaints over that, but I actually believe that being pragmatic about it and sometimes using tables is actually okay. Looking forward, I think that we as web standards developers can be quite excited. I think that the beta copy of IE7, although not perfect, is certainly a step in the right direction. And so I'm hopeful that browser support is going to improve over the next coming years. And I'd also encourage you to start considering producing alternative interfaces using CSS and doing some CSS swapping if you haven't already tried it. One thing you might particularly want to look at is the idea of creating a low vision version of your site. So that's not back to the bad old days where you had a separate text-only version of your site that was never kept up to date and kind of just ghettoed anybody with any kind of visual impairment. What I'm talking about is basically creating an alternate interface onto the same content, but one that's particularly appropriate to people with low vision. And there's a whole load of stuff relating to creating a low vision design, and you can find out more about that on the boagworld.com website. So there you go, there's a brief introduction into web standards, why I think it's cool and why I think people should be adopting it. Okay, so enough of web standards, let's move on to the subject of web design news. There are four news stories I want to briefly look at today. One is the fact that the old debate about what is web accessibility has raised its head once more. Basically, all of this was sparked off by Joe Clark's article that I mentioned last week about facts and opinions about PDF accessibility. And in his articles, he made the mistake of saying the goal of accessibility advocates is to improve accessibility for people with disabilities, period. This was a slightly controversial statement to make that has put a lot of people's backs up. The problem basically revolves around the fact that there are two camps web accessibility. One camp believes that web accessibility is about meeting the needs of disabled people only. The other camp of people believe that web accessibility is much broader than that and is about broadening out accessibility to cover really all kinds of access to your website, whether that be as a disabled person or somebody using a old browser or whatever. So really it's a semantic debate about the word accessibility and what that actually means. Now, there's been a lot of backwards and forwards, a lot of people disagreeing with Joe, a lot of people agreeing with him, but there was one article that for me summed up my personal position on this. Well, actually that's not true. I would have described myself before reading this article as somebody that believed accessibility was for everybody, no matter whether they're disabled, using an old browser or whatever. But after reading this particular article, it's helped me to refine my terminology a little bit. And the article is by a guy called Derek Featherstone. You'll find a link to the article from my blog. And basically Derek takes the point of view that there is accessibility and there is availability, and that there is a difference between the two. Accessibility refers to the fact that some people have not got access to your website because of a disability, and they have no control over that. They have no control over their lack of vision or their motor skills or whatever, and that is in itself an accessibility issue. He describes as accessibility as basically relating to people with a disability, and it's a human rights issue. He then talks about availability and how that relates to whether your site is available to people using different or alternative platforms or devices, but that is actually a choice issue. They do have control over whether or not they upgrade to the latest application or browser or whatever. And it's a really good article that's really balanced and well-rounded. The only thing that I would bring up about it is that some people actually do not have a choice about what browser platform they're using or what plugins they have available to them. That actually this isn't just an availability issue. For them it's an access issue because their access is limited. This might be due to the fact that they're using internet connections in libraries because they can't afford to have a PC and broadband access at home. It might be because they are accessing from a work environment where they've got a limited platform. It might be that they simply can't afford broadband and so they're excluded from some sites as a result of that. So the water is a bit muddier than is described in Derek's article, but I think the basic principle about talking about accessibility and availability is a useful distinction that perhaps helps quell some of these arguments that exist about the subject. So that's been in the news a lot this week. Another one which relates to, again, something I mentioned last week, is the List Apart site. You remember I said that List Apart had launched a new site and how that was really exciting. Well, one of the things that have come out that is a yet another debate in relationship to the issue of fixed width sites or fluid sites. Does your site expand to fill the browser window, or does it work to a fixed size? And there's been a whole load of discussion about the fact that a List Apart have moved from 800 by 600 fixed width site to 1024 by 768 fixed width site, and they argue that's because the majority of their audience is viewing at that side. But that's caused an uproar amongst those people that believe that sites should be fluid, arguing that not everybody has their browser open full window, and a lot of other related kind of gubbins that's get churned up about that in that discussion. Again, I have to say, I don't think there's really any right or wrong answer to here. There are certain situations when a fixed width site is preferable, and there are other situations where it's preferable for the site to be fluid. I have to say that as a designer, traditionally I lean towards building fixed width sites, mainly because you have a more control over the design. You can control issues like line length and that kind of thing. However, if I'm honest, in my heart of hearts, I think from an accessibility and usability point of view, a fluid site is probably better. But there are other things in design that need to be taken into consideration. Things like branding and getting your branding exactly the way that your client wants it to be. Things like budgetary constraints, because I would actually argue it's probably more complex to build a fluid site than it is a fixed width site in some situations. And so it takes longer and therefore costs more, and is the client always willing to pay for that? So that debate is raging. It's all the classic website flash points are all up and in the news this week. Another kind of in thing at the moment, I wouldn't really call it news, but it's certainly something that's come up quite a lot, is the subject of Ajax. Now, if you haven't encountered Ajax, Ajax basically is an artificial name that's been used to describe a number of different technologies that are coming together and working in a new way. So those are technologies like XML, CSS, JavaScript. And basically, it's about asynchronous transfer of data. So what that means in practice is basically that you can go to a website and you can complete certain actions on that website which would normally require a refresh of the page in order to be able to see the results of that action. So for example, if you went to a form and you were you wanted to have that form auto-completed. So for example, you type in your postcode, which I'm sure you've seen before, and it completes the rest of your address. Now normally that would need to connect to the server, refresh the page and fill in those fields. Well, with Ajax you can fill those fields in automatically without refreshing the page. There's some big name examples of this knocking around. I'm sure most of you have seen Google Maps at maps.google.co.uk. I always use the English version, just substitute that with .com if you want to see the American version. But basically that that uses Ajax in order to kind of preload the surrounding map. That means you can scroll around the page without having to constantly reload the page. So Ajax isn't really a news item, but I thought I'd mention it just in passing, so you can find out a bit more about it if that's something that's of interest to you. My final bit of news for the day is the subject that I discovered on dig.com, that somebody has come across the fact that some details of Photoshop CS3 have already been leaked. And actually there's some information knocking around about what the next version of Photoshop might hold, even though CS2 has only recently come out. And some of the things that have been mentioned is that there might possibly be two versions of the next version of Photoshop, a Premiere version and a standard version. And quite what the difference is between these two versions is unclear at the moment. But suffice it to say, there will be some extra functionality added to both versions, including things like improvements on smart objects and improvements on the new vanishing point tools, both of which were introduced with CS2. And I don't know whether you've come across those, but certainly smart objects are amazingly powerful and really worth exploring in more depth. Perhaps we'll spend a bit of time focusing those on in the future. But nothing really amazing, nothing that's blown me away, nothing that's got me really excited. So we'll see. Perhaps it's just that not much information has yet been released. So let's finish this edition of BoagWorld.com by taking a quick look at Dreamweaver 8. Suffice it to say that when I heard the news that Dreamweaver 8 was out, I couldn't open my browser window fast enough, and my 2 meg connection just wasn't quick enough to get me to the site. I was so excited to see what new stuff they'd got. I was like a giddy schoolchild. When I did get there, I was pleasantly surprised. Generally speaking, it's a really good upgrade. I won't go through all of the features now, because you can check out the site for yourself and have a look what's there. Equally, I won't go through everything that the studio as a whole contains, simply because there isn't enough time. But there are a few things I do want to point out. One of them is the fact that they've done a lot of work of improving their support for designers that want to use CSS. So it ties in with what we were talking about earlier. They've produced a better and combined CSS panel, which contains all of the key features you need there. They've improved the rendering as well, because Dreamweaver's WYSIWYG editor never really showed CSS-based design very well. So apparently they've sorted that out, which is excellent and a really good news, especially when that is then combined with the fact that they've introduced guides, so you can drag guides around and help you with the layout of your site, and you can even zoom in on the site and really get down to that pixel perfect detail that people seem to demand these days. The other nice thing relating to CSS is that you can outline different screen elements, so divs and things like that, and actually see how the page has been made up in the CSS. So that's all really good news. But I wouldn't want to go through this without kind of balancing things a little bit with a couple of criticisms, but they're not really big things, but I feel like I need to mention them. One is the fact that they've apparently improved their accessibility reports, and that now you can check against priority 1 and priority 2 checkpoints. Well, I can't say I'm really that fussed about that. I'm not a great fan of automated accessibility checking anyway. And why haven't they set it up for priority 3? Seems really bizarre that they've only done the first two. But anyway, so that was a bit of a feature in nothing, if you know what I mean. The other thing is that they've apparently improved their FTP package, but only by allowing you to FTP things up in the background while you continue to work. And that doesn't really address some of the fundamental problems that exist with their FTP software, which basically boils down to the fact that this shit really doesn't work. It's got no queue, and it's just pants. I never use it. So they haven't really sorted out that particular gripe for me. But let's leave on a high note by saying that they've also improved the coding window loads, which is good news. They've got features now like you can collapse tags and even collapse selections in order to be able to work your way better through your code and see what's going on. And finally, my last comment, which I was quite excited about, was the fact that they've now allowed you to manipulate RSS and XML as any other data set, so you can drag and drop bits of RSS feed directly into your site, which has got to be a good thing. So all in all, thumbs up for Dreamweaver 8, and it's definitely an upgrade I'll be purchasing. On which point I would like to say, I gave Macromedia a ring trying to find out when they're going to be releasing it, and the date that they're currently working on at the moment is the 17th of September. That's in the UK at least. I presume that's a universal release date. So 17th of September at the moment, but they did cover themselves by saying that date may slip. Okay, so I think really that's everything for this podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope it's covered all the issues that you wanted me to. And once again, let me encourage you to send me your feedback. Let me know what you think of it. Let me know what you want to see in future. And if you want to shove some MP3 files of asking various questions or making suggestions, I'd love to receive those as well. Everything we've talked about on this podcast today will be available via my website. And so if you go to www.boagworld.com/podcast, you'll be able to get to everything we've discussed, and there'll be links to some of the key things as well. Thanks very much. See you next week. Bye.